Chapter 11, Gateways. Smoke invaded Roy's lungs, acrid and coarse. A cool wind swept up the haze and smudged it in an ochre streak across the sky. He narrowed his eyes, ignoring the autumnal chill in the air as he surveyed the wreckage around him. The cars had pulled up as close as they could, but the officials still had to pick their way through the debris to reach the center of the ruins. Everyone was unsure and confused. The human mind, when faced with such a vast situation, could not find one point on which to focus. It literally could not work out where to begin. Fear, revulsion, horror, all emotions collided in a frenzied tangle, rendering the living as broken as the dead. Inwardly, Roy shuddered, his quick mind already calculating a gruesome death toll as he surveyed the damage. The explosion had been huge, and it had struck the city at its busiest time. He could already hear the horns of motorists stuck on the roads and see the distant twinkle of Morse code from the stranded trains, unable to go any further. Central had come to a standstill, and it wouldn't be long before the metropolis began to choke. The city wasn't self-sufficient. They relied on trade to provide food for its people. How long did they have before supplies ran low? Logic was a sanctuary to him. He could observe his own cold thoughts with detached fascination. It was a method of self-protection, allowing him to function as a leader while protecting himself from the truth. If it was all distant and meaningless, then he could pretend that it did not strike him to the quick with despair. He could think that these people did not have families or connections. They were just corpses, nameless, faceless bodies. In the broad light of day, logic was a refuge. But Roy knew he would not sleep well tonight. Present and past would blend and merge, and he would be helpless to stop it. He stood with his arms crossed and shook away his selfish doubts. His thoughts were caught in a tangle of unanswered questions, but his military training came to the fore, picking out the features of the event. It could be the precursor to an attack, weakening Central's supply lines and placing it under siege. But there had been no news of an advancing army. The neighboring countries may harbor a brooding resentment for Amstress, and barely concealed their disdain for Führer Hakuto. But it didn't make sense. Unless this was part of a covert operation, it seemed too random. There had been no build-up, no threats or posturing among the other politicians. So who was responsible? Like water circling the drain, he kept coming back to what had happened at the gate. There was an unsolved mystery, an unexplained circumstance. Roy did not believe in luck or coincidence, but he knew what his gut was telling him. There was no invasion, at least, not of this world. The explosion was somehow related to the gate. That knowledge was a bitter taste on his tongue, and he could only swallow back his irritation. He had to wait for the facts. He had to know the full of it. Until then, they were only grasping at straws, and the reasons were not as crucial as the recovery. There would be time enough for whys later. Now they had to pick up the pieces and face what had been lost. Everything lay in ruin. Buildings, trains, and people. Now, in the middle of it all, he could detect the tang of blood in the air. It was everywhere, smeared like paint or smashed in miasmic pools. He tried not to look too closely at the bodies, but morbid horror was undeniable. See what killed them, and learn so it cannot kill you in turn. "Havoc, Breida," he called out, his voice carrying across the site. "Get the perimeter secure. Make sure that no one gets through except emergency personnel. Hawkeye, talk to the paramedics and find out about the survivors. He lowered his voice, letting the harsh command take on a more human touch. Al was meant to be here somewhere. I'm sure he's fine, but I need to know. She set off, without a word of response, giving only a quick, certain nod of comprehension before picking her way swiftly over the rubble. Havoc and Breida began to urge curious spectators away, clearing a large area so that work could begin. Roy glanced over his shoulder, checking the gathering crowd for any signs of trouble. It would be the perfect opportunity for someone to instigate a fight. Anti-military sentiment was still strong, and all it would take was a sign of indifference to spark a riot. The soldiers had to be seen helping. The police, medics, and fire masters were given heroes. The army, for all its power, was looked upon with disfavor. Armstrong, Roy began, beckoning the hulk of a man over. I need you to push people back. Get them to go home if they're unharmed, or to the hospitals if they're injured. If someone is looking for information on the fatalities, then tell them that the victims have been taken to the two main infirmaries. Make sure they check there. Do you understand? Of course, but... Armstrong hesitated, his mustache twitching. It was a sign that he was unsure how genteel his next question would appear, and Roy waved a hand for him to ask it. It would be quicker to simply order them home. There is a time and place for niceties. If we push them away, it could cause more problems in the long run. I don't want people to use this as an excuse to bash the military. I'm asking you because your rank will make them feel important, and it will prevent any accusations that we are ignoring their concerns. Mustang lowered his voice further, speaking with a deep intensity. Use your charm, whatever it takes. Just get them out of here politely and without fuss. We don't need a massive crowd if anything goes wrong. Armstrong's massive chest swelled with pride, and Roy managed a smile for the man who towered over him. With one neat, perfect salute, the major departed, his booming voice gentled into sympathetic tones as he gradually began to disperse the crowd. Before long, others had joined him, turning people away with soft words and quiet advice. He could hear Fallman promising a young woman that he would inform her of any news about her husband as soon as they knew more. Roy raised an eyebrow to himself, knowing that it would not be an empty oath, not from anyone in his team. They would all be feeling the personal pinch and the emotion furor of this. Some of the other commanding officers would sneer and say that there was no room in the army for such sensitivity, but he knew better. They couldn't just be brash and cold, stamping all over everything with clumsy boots. The army might belong to Amstris, but Amstris didn't belong to the army. Sometimes he wondered if he was the only person who realized that. It certainly wasn't the Fuhrer's philosophy. Roy marched across the rubble, not caring that the ground was uneven as he made his way toward the tangled remains of the station. A police chief was talking to one of the firemasters, and they nodded in acknowledgement as he approached. Brigadier General, the policeman, Jacobs, greeted him politely, and Roy nodded in return. The police, for all their interfering, were generally reliable, and Jacobs was among the best. He didn't blindly follow orders, but he wasn't an idiot either. I realize that this is a civilian crisis, Roy began, letting his voice slip into the no-nonsense, authoritative tone that rarely failed, but my men will need to investigate. This blast was alchemical, and it falls under our jurisdiction as a result. Like at the warehouse? Jacobs asked, a hint of reproof in his tone. He had not been best impressed when Roy had banished the police from the scene only a few days ago. I'm sorry, sir, but two explosions in such close proximity do suggest that there is a criminal element at work. Undoubtedly, Roy agreed, glancing quickly back over his shoulder, checking on the status of each of his men with one look. I'm not asking you to put this under our purview alone. We need everyone's cooperation, and I'm sure you could make use of the manpower I have at my disposal. He looked from one man to the other, reading their doubts and needs easily. Both forces were woefully understaffed to deal with a problem of this size, and keep the city running smoothly simultaneously. To devote the entire police and fire teams to one task would be disastrous, and they knew it. Even if the military were the only ones in control of recovery, they would still have men to spare. It all came down to numbers. "You plan to reconstruct using alchemy?" the Firemaster asked curiously. "Are you sure that's wise?" "I'm relying on your expertise to tell me when it's safe," Roy responded, knowing that the subtle flattery would make convincing the man far easier than a curt order. "This station can't be out of operation for long. If we rebuild it manually, the line could be closed for months. We could have it up and running within a matter of days if we use alchemy, but we will need to be sure that there are no bodies remaining." The Firemaster rubbed his chin thoughtfully and removed his helmet, letting a shock of ginger hair fall across his face. He was slightly older than Roy, and his green eyes were narrow as he glanced at Jacobs. "If it was a bomb, rather than alchemy, wouldn't reconstructing the station also reconstruct the explosive device?" "Yes," Roy replied, reaching desperately for his patience. "But this wasn't a bomb. The pattern's wrong and too extensive. If it was alchemy, then the cause of the explosion would reform, but it would be benign and inactive. We'd remove it and neutralize it immediately." Finally, the two men nodded, albeit reluctantly. "I'll talk to the paramedics about getting the remains away from the scene, while Lucas," Jacobs motioned to the Firemaster, "makes the engine safe. May I suggest, Brigadier General, that you and your men dig in? We will have to shift all the debris to make sure that the station is clear before you can begin reconstruction." With a nod, Roy retreated, leaving the two men to manage their teams as he surveyed the remains of the building again. The foundations were still standing, and that was something to work with. It would not be a quick job. It might be possible to construct a large array around the station, but the track would need to be restored one section at a time. It would be a laborious process, and even with every alchemist they had, the chances were that it would take days to complete. "Sir?" Blinking, he realized that Hawkeye was standing patiently at his elbow, her brown eyes looking up at him with a hint of sad amusement. "Yes, Lieutenant?" "Al and Miss Rockabell are all right. A little bruised, but otherwise whole. They're in the back of that ambulance." She motioned toward the edge of the destruction, where one vehicle still stood. In it, he could see Al lying with his head on Winry's lap. A flash of white on his forehead suggested a bandage, but otherwise he seemed unharmed. Winry was leaning forward, one hand resting on Al's cheek, while the other pointed accusingly at the figure opposite her. Even from here, he could see the anger on her face. She gesticulated viciously as she spoke, and Roy knew that if she could get her hands on something heavy, she would be throwing it with all the force of her fury. Edward sat opposite her, his body tense and rejecting. Roy felt his jaw clench, and the cool detachment he had mastered slipped from his grasp. His anger must have shown on his face, because Risa took a quick step back as he spun on his heel, stalking over to the ambulance. He wanted to throttle the youth for being so careless, for disobeying his orders, and for daring to follow him here. He had deliberately avoided all thought of what had happened at his home, pushing it aside as he faced the more urgent problem. Now it came flooding back to him, the sick, drained feeling before he lost consciousness, followed by the hot buzz of energy that had woken him from the darkness. Ed had caused it both. And even now, Roy's body was twitching with that power. His skin felt as though it were crackling with life, and every breath was almost like a high. And then, an image flashed through his mind of Ed underneath him, amber eyes dark and flashing as he pressed his body hotly to Roy's own. It was enough to make his step falter, and a sharp jolt of heat flashed downwards. Ruthlessly, bitterly, he shoved that thought away. It had been a moment of weakness, and he wouldn't have let it carry on to its natural conclusion. He would have pulled away, even if it weren't for the explosion. Roy felt his lips twist into an ugly sneer of derision at his own denial. But he did not admit the truth to himself. If he did that, then it was an acknowledgement that he was no longer in control. If he couldn't even have supremacy over his own flesh and the drive of his instincts, then he was lost. Edward was a temptation, dangerous and wild. In a moment, he had gone from knowing that the young alchemist would never fail him to doubting every one of Fullmetal's motivations. Every word that passed his lips could be a lie, and every expression a disguise. He had to know what Edward was hiding. He needed to find out exactly what had happened at the gate. Until then, he was back to square one with Fullmetal. Of course, he realized as he drew close to the ambulance, it was a catch-22 situation. He would not trust Fullmetal until he knew everything that the young man wasn't telling him, and Ed would never trust him enough to tell him the whole of it. That simple fact would not stop him from trying. One way or the other, he would know it all, and he would be in control again. Taking a deep breath, Roy hesitated, leaning against the side of the ambulance as he listened to Winry's words. Maybe she would succeed where he had failed. Maybe she could get Ed to betray something of what was happening. Roy was out of their sight here, but it was easy enough to catch her ire. Her voice was high and quiet, as though she were trying not to disturb someone, but was desperate to yell and shout and scream. "How could you, Edward? How could you do this to us? All that time we were right there and you didn't tell us anything about it!" She took a deep breath, as though trying to calm herself. "What scared you? The thought that we wouldn't care at all? Or that we'd care too much? God forbid that anyone ever tries to help you. We'd only ever get in your way, right?" "Winry..." Ed's voice was tough and firm, a warning. He didn't want to hear what she had to say, but she wasn't about to hold her tongue. Roy smirked to himself. There was no way for Ed to get out of this one. His brother's presence kept him in place, even as Winry's temper lashed at him without mercy. "Don't you Winry me! You're a fool, Edward, and what's worse is that you never learn. You're still lying now, aren't you? Al is frightened of losing you, and guilty because he thinks it's his fault. You just don't care. You don't care enough to tell anyone the truth, not even your little brother." "It's not like that." "Then what is it like? I'm not stupid. Do you think I won't understand if you tell me what's happening to you? Or is it that you just like being the martyr, sacrificing yourself for other people because it gives you a kick?" There were tears in her voice now. And when Ed didn't reply at all, her breath hitched. "Your mother didn't bring you up to lie, Edward. Do you really think she would be proud of you right now, keeping Al in the dark?"
"Ouch, talk about below the belt."
Roy jumped at the whispering voice near his shoulder and looked to see Hughes shamelessly listening in. His friend's face was grim, but his eyes were gleaming with curiosity. The ambulance was silent, and Roy felt a glimmer of unease. Speaking to Ed about his mother was a surefire way to throw the young alchemist into a funk of depression, and he knew that Winry hadn't engaged her brain before uttering that last statement. The problem was that it was unlikely to make Edward open up. Instead, it would close him off even further. Taking a deep breath, he stepped around the ambulance, releasing his earlier anger and letting it have free rein as he spoke through gritted teeth.
"I ordered you to stay where you were, Fullmetal. You are not fit for active duty."
Ed shrugged, an indifferent, distant motion that spoke volumes of his mood. He was staring at the ambulance floor, not meeting anyone's gaze. If he had looked up, he would have seen the tears of frustration, sadness, and regret in Winry's eyes. The young woman held herself rigid, one hand tangling nervously in Al's hair. She was staring at Edward, watching him pull away even as he sat still. And Roy knew how much that hurt. He'd been in the same position enough times, watching Ed build a wall that he couldn't break down if he tried. When her eyes met his, Roy gave a small twitch of surprise. In the past, he'd seen many things in that young woman's face, a lot of loathing and a barrage of disgust, but never this. It was a plea for help, not a wide-eyed begging expression, but one of desperation. She didn't need words to convey her urgency, and before he realized it, he'd given her a tiny nod of agreement. He would do what he could.
Hughes, if Gratio wouldn't mind, can you take Al and Winry back to your place?
Of course. Mace nodded, reaching in to shake Al back into wakefulness. The young man seemed tired, but not unduly confused. When his eyes alighted on his brother, there was no smile or sadness, just his lips settling themselves into a thin, determined line. Roy wondered if Al had heard what Winry had said, but he gave no hint of disapproval. Either he hadn't been listening, or he thought that his brother deserved to feel the stab of that particular barb. Stiffly, they climbed down from the ambulance, and Al hesitated near Roy, keeping his voice low.
"I saw the woman Lieutenant Colonel Hughes described from the gate running away from the station," he said quietly, wincing as he clutched his head. "She was heading toward the north, and I think she's responsible for this. Ed wants to go after her. Don't let him."
Roy nodded, absently moving to block Edward's path in case he decided to leap up and give chase. But he didn't even stir.
"We'll keep an eye out for her. Go home and get some rest. I'll look after Ed."
"Why don't you send him back with us?" Hughes asked. "There's plenty of space."
"I'm not going anywhere." Ed's voice was dull but determined, and Roy knew from the stiffness of the young man's shoulders that he was picking a fight. Winry's words may have been painful, but it wasn't remorse that she had inspired. It was cold, hard resentment.
"If Carmine's here, then I'm going to look for her."
"No, you're not," Roy growled, sensing the challenge in the young man and rising to it. "You can't be trusted to obey a simple order. You're staying put."
Edward looked up at that, his expression one of utter fury. His eyes were dark and volatile, and his lips were pinched with the urge to swear and shout. For a moment, Roy thought he would break, but instead he swallowed back his words and glowered. Hughes caught Roy's eye, raising an eyebrow.
"I'll be back as soon as I've got these two settled. Something tells me you'll need all the help you can get tonight."
He didn't wait for Roy's reply before he led Winry and Al away, talking to them about what they had seen. As they went, Ed jumped down from the back of the ambulance and turned away, kicking a piece of rubble and watching it skitter and bounce.
"Why?" he snapped, not bothering to face Roy with his demand. "Why won't you let me follow her?"
"Use your head, Full Metal,"
Roy replied wearily. "Al saw her over 30 minutes ago. She's probably long gone by now. She'll show her face again sooner or later."
"And how many more people will she kill?"
Ed's question was cold, and Roy closed his eyes. He was in command, and he couldn't let the young man's petulance get the better of him. But he had a point.
"I'm giving you an order, Fullmetal. Stay here."
For a moment, he thought he would disobey. He could see the conflict in Ed's body, as though part of him longed to walk away while another was held inexplicably in place. Roy didn't fool himself. It wasn't out of any respect for his authority. He almost asked Ed if he was all right, but observation stopped him. There weren't any traces of weakness or illness. No fever flushed his skin, and he moved with a fluid, powerful grace that Roy hadn't seen in a long time, not since before Al had gotten his body back. It was as if, after years of pain, Edward had found solace and reclaimed his center. His expression was angry and fierce, but it was not lined with agony, nor was his movement hampered by discomfort. Questions perched on his lips, some softly curious, others vile and bitter. He suspected this recovery had something to do with what had happened back at the house. Moving closer to where Edward stood, Roy sucked in a breath, concentrating hard. The strange buzz of power he had felt was stronger now, as though being nourished by something. It made his skin tingle, and his fingers itched to click and use the strength that was right there for the taking. He had felt something like this before, back in Ishbal. It was the same kind of surge he had sensed from the Philosopher's Stone, a ragged, hoary feeling that longed to be put to use. Couldn't Ed feel it? He seemed ignorant of the spark in the air, but it was there, just like the atmosphere before a storm rolled in. "What are you doing?" The question was a hiss, a barely there whisper, but it still reached Ed's ears. "It feels like you're performing alchemy, but I can see that you're not. What the hell did you do to me back at the house?" Ed clamped his teeth shut tight and turned his back, keeping his face diverted as he replied. "I told you. All I did was put back what the array took from you. Nothing else." "That doesn't explain anything," Royce snapped, closing his eyes and physically stepping back as he felt his anger coiling like a snake, ready to strike. Taking a deep breath, he shook his head. "This isn't helping, Edward. I need a full report on what happened at the gate, and what's been happening to you since. The presence of that woman shows it's all linked in. This isn't just about you anymore." Ed turned to face him, golden eyes molten with anger as his jaw tightened. "So you're saying this is my fault?" He waved a hand at the shattered remnants of the station. "I keep telling you that there's nothing to explain." "And I know that you're lying. What are you afraid of?" The question seemed to strike home as he saw Edward flinch, shying away as though Roy had struck him. It had been a shot in the dark. Even as a child, it had been hard to imagine Fullmetal being afraid of anything. Now it was even more at odds with what he knew about the young man. Alarm bells were shrilling loudly in his head, and he knew he was marching the fine line of Ed's anger. One wrong word, and there was every possibility that Ed would simply walk away and not come back. "I expect your report on my desk in the morning, Major." When Ed did not reply, Roy turned away, his footsteps echoing as he strode across the debris. The urge to grab Edward's arm and drag him along, to force him to obey his orders, was strong. Still, trust had to begin somewhere, and he was hoping that Ed would make the right choice. He did not bother to check to see if the young alchemist was behind him. Instead, Roy forced himself to check his other subordinates before he made his way into the heart of the station. Mutely, he shed his jacket, grabbing a shovel and began to dig, as around him others did the same. People set up lamps, running them off of noisy generators as true night settled in. It turned the ruins into a patchwork of dazzling light and grim shadows. The vivid splashes of scarlet blood dried to smeared rusty stains with each passing hour. But still they carried on. "Should the boss be doing that?" Havoc asked quietly, resting on his shovel for a moment and nodding towards the track. Roy looked up, feeling an unwelcome flutter of relief when he saw that Edward was still there. He was helping a couple of privates move a large boulder from where it rested on the tracks. With a great heave, they managed to get it onto the platform, revealing the tangled wreck of metal and sleepers beneath. "He's been told to rest, but you know what he's like." Roy shook his head to himself and scowled at his gloves, which were ripped from hours of hard labor. "Besides, he's not meant to be left alone. At least here there are plenty of people to keep an eye on him." "Plenty of people for him to get lost among, too. I caught him heading for the perimeter about 20 minutes ago. He said he was getting some fresh air, but..." Jean shrugged, not bothering to finish as he jabbed at a bit of stone. "I stayed with him until he came back here." Roy digested this in silence, a heavy, uncomfortable weight settling in his chest. "Thank you, Havoc." With an irritated grunt of acknowledgement, Havoc propped his shovel against his hip and scratched fiercely at his arm. Like everyone else, the lieutenant had rolled up his sleeves to pitch in with the others, and his jacket was long gone. The exposed skin was tanned, but was already turning red with scratch marks. "You all right?" Havoc shrugged and peered at his flesh. "I think it's something in the air. Armstrong and Fallman, even Hawkeye, were complaining that they felt
strange. It's kind of like my skin is crawling and I'm all edgy. Maybe there's a gas leak or something? He looked around absently, a thoughtful frown on his face as another thought occurred to him. Shouldn't we be tired by now? We've been working, digging, worrying, and none of us have slept well over the past few days. This morning I was so tired I didn't think I could get out of bed. Now I can hardly keep still, and everyone else looks like they just got here. He gestured around, and Roy realized that he was right. Everyone seemed to be wide awake and intent on their respective tasks, despite the fact that they had been doing physically punishing work well into the night.
"When did this start?" Roy asked. "The itching, I mean. When did you notice it first?"
"A few minutes after we got here. Do you know what it is?" Roy shrugged, his gaze drifting to Edward again as he frowned.
"I don't know what's going on. Just do me a favor and keep an eye on Fullmetal. If you notice anything strange, anything at all, then tell me. Something isn't right."
Havoc nodded in agreement before returning to work, pausing every so often to scratch. He had thought the buzz in his own system was to do with whatever Edward had done. But if that was the case, then it should only be affecting him. Even as he watched, he could see the men around Edward were rubbing absently at their skin as though it prickled. And none of them showed any sign of fatigue. By now they should have been exhausted and surly, facing the long night ahead with grim determination. Instead, it was as though they were fresh to the scene. Someone tugged the shovel from his unresisting grip, and he frowned as Hughes chuckled and shrugged out of his jacket.
"You were miles away," he pointed out gently as he set to work. "Al and Winry are fine. In fact, they're complaining that they have to stay out of the way."
He became serious, his expressive face taking on a hint of strain.
"I don't think either of them will sleep well tonight. They're lucky they left when they did. If they'd stayed a couple minutes longer, then they would have been in the morgue."
Roy rubbed a hand over his face, nodding in understanding. It was easy to forget that this could have been worse. This could have been personal for all of them, rather than another disaster to manage.
"Did Al tell you anything else about the woman?"
"The description matched who we saw at the gate." Mace frowned thoughtfully.
"Mind you, just seeing her running from here doesn't necessarily mean she's responsible. She just might have known what was happening and been getting away to save her own skin."
It was Carmine. Ed's words, quiet and certain, made them turn in surprise. He stood not far away, a piece of stone in his hands. He was scowling at it, brushing his fingers over the surface, and Roy could see that he was picking out a pattern. Carefully he turned it over, showing them a fractured piece of an array. "I recognize this. She used the same thing at the gate," Ed muttered, bending down and picking up another piece of rubble. As Roy watched over his shoulder, the young man put them together. The edges locked together perfectly.
"You're telling me she used the same thing here, at the station? What for?"
"This was part of the design she left me in. I guess it was to do with sacrificing a living thing to whatever was beyond the gate." Ed kicked around among the debris, scowling as he picked up a larger slab. "Except that there has to be some variation because it wouldn't work on this kind of scale. The array can't be bigger than 5 feet across. Why kill everyone if you could only use the handful of people who happened to be standing inside the circle?" Roy cocked his head to one side, watching the anger and coldness on Ed's face dissipate. In its place was the familiar flame of curiosity. To say Ed was brilliant at alchemy was an understatement. His theorizing often stretched the limits of known practice, but it never failed to make sense. He simply saw the world in a different way. "I need to go back to the warehouse and get a better look at the array there. It was too big to take in completely, but I bet whatever happened here used the same basic design." Unflinchingly, Ed's gaze met Roy's own, challenging him to deny the simple request. Mulishly, he considered it for a moment, tempted to say that there were more important things to do. But eventually, Roy nodded in agreement.
"Hawkeye, Hughes, I need you two to supervise the clear-up for an hour or so. If you find anything that looks like part of an array, any stones with any pattern or engraving on it, then put them to one side. I'll be back soon.
Wait, Ed protested. I can look after myself.
Either I come with you, or you don't go at all.
Roy shrugged indifferently, forcing himself not to read too much into Ed's reluctance for his company.
Your choice, Fullmetal.
For a moment, he didn't reply, his face set into a scowl as he turned the piece of stone over and over in his palms. His fleshed fingertips ran over the lines time and again, as though he were memorizing the feel of the contusions. Eventually, he sighed, shaking his head in irritation. Fine, you can drive. Mutely, Roy took the keys from Hawkeye, ignoring her warning look. The woman took pride in the black automobile, and he knew that to gaunch the gears or scratch the paintwork would bring Reza's full wrath down upon him.
1 hour, Hughes called out as they picked their way toward the perimeter. Or we come looking for you.
The car purred to life, moving swiftly down the quiet streets as Roy drummed his fingers on the steering wheel absently. The roads were almost empty. Traffic jams had been cleared and journeys abandoned as people realized they would not be getting to their destinations tonight. It made the drive an easy one, and his mind began to drift. Images of the station flickering in front of his eyes, and he could feel the slow creep of horror beginning to steal his logic. Where there had been facts and figures, strategies and plans, there was now blood, grief, and agony. There had been a child lying dead, half caught in her mother's arms. Somewhere there was a father and husband who had just lost his family. This night would bring him nothing but the hollow bite of loss, and Roy felt the first shudder of empathy. What's wrong? Fullmetal's quiet question made him flinch, and he turned the motion into a shrug. Nothing important. He could feel Edward's alright eyes staring at him. A sideways glance confirmed his suspicion, and he sighed at Ed's hypocrisy. The youth had folded his arms and watched Roy with such blatant doubt that it was almost comical. Edward expected people to be an open book to him. He hated guile and secrecy and couldn't bear it when faced with someone who was less than truthful. Yet here he was, using the same tricks he despised in others. Silence and evasion were the tools he employed so well, almost as though he were born to gentle deceit. Ever since he was young, he had told lies and turned away pointed questions with a shield of feigned ignorance. Roy doubted that there was any malice behind it. More likely it was for self-preservation, and the protection of those that Fullmetal held dear. But the motive didn't change the outcome. Roy turned the car down the street and pulled up to the battered remains of the warehouse, ignoring Ed's sigh of irritation at his stubborn silence. Wordlessly, he got out of the car, grimacing as the same emotions from a couple of nights ago returned full force. He could almost taste the dust in the air again and smell the acrid scent of alchemy. His body was abruptly tense and on edge, as though it was waiting for history to repeat itself. Ed still stood by the car, propped against the door as he surveyed what was left of the place through hooded eyes. For once his expression was unreadable, and Roy found himself watching, rapt. Ed looked neither discomforted nor awed. It was as though he had detached himself from what had happened here yesterday. A slight movement shattered the illusion, and Roy watched Edward trace a quick line down the column of his neck. Hughes had said that Ed's throat had been slit, and Roy knew that he was remembering the slip of the knife through his flesh. This wasn't as easy for Ed as he was making out. I can't see a fucking thing from here. I need to get up on one of the roofs. Edward's curt words seemed loud amidst the peace, and Roy nodded in agreement before following him up the rickety fire escape of the nearest warehouse. The roof itself was pitted with holes and badly constructed patches of corrugated iron. It clanked noisily underfoot, echoing like a massive drum as they skirted their way around the worst of the damage,
checking each step with their weight before committing themselves. When they finally reached the edge, Roy felt an involuntary rush of air fill his lungs, drying his lips with its passage. The array was sprawled out before them, dead black lines on charred earth. The face of it was ravaged by cracks, but it was still discernible. The pattern was a series of circles, heavily laced with symbols, each one touched by the other, a kiss of line on line. Amestrian alchemy relied on simple demarcations, but this was different. Each array was formed in bands about as wide as Roy's finger was long. The twin concentric circles of each carried a cluster of something, possibly a foreign language, spanning the circumference. "It looks complicated, doesn't it?" Edward asked. There wasn't any doubt in his voice. In fact, his words were strong with confidence, as though he could understand what he was seeing. "It's actually more simple than what we use. There's a portion for sacrifice of the living, another for sacrifice of the dead, and the last one is for protection." The section he pointed to, at the furthest point from where he stood, was the one most heavily dappled with runes. Some were balancing, meant to stabilize a flow of power. Others were for elemental control. Fire, earth, air, and water were all represented in the band around the edge of the design.
"Some of them look familiar," Roy said, "like they're related to things we use today."
"They are," Ed replied. "This alchemy isn't different. It's just much older. Over the years, it's been made easier. Why draw three circles when one will do the trick?"
He stared at the array for a moment longer, but the smile on his face had faded. The thrill of discovery was short-lived, and now he seemed to be eyeing it suspiciously, as though expecting it to flare into life.
"The portion I was in is definitely similar to the one at the station. But that doesn't make sense. You couldn't use it on its own. What was she trying to do?"
Without another word, Edward turned around, making quick work of his descent, and leaving Roy to follow at a more sedate pace. He felt hopelessly out of his depth, and that made him frustrated with his own lack of expertise. The narrow focus of becoming Führer did not leave much time for alchemical research. Yes, he was an expert at the control of the fire element, and practiced at many other techniques, but compared to Edward, he felt like a novice. By the time Roy got to the edge of the array, Fullmetal was already on his knees, tracing the outline and muttering to himself. He acted carefully, like a man petting a sleeping, wild animal, and Roy found himself falling back on his role as commanding officer, demanding answers in a clear, concise tone. "Was the array damaged in the explosion?"
Edward looked up, taking in the sprawling spider of cracks for a moment before shaking his head.
"No, I overloaded it to free Hughes. She was channeling energy through it, so I did the same. I just pushed against her rather than working with her."
"How did you know that would succeed?"
Roy demanded, staring in disbelief at Ed's down-bent head. What he had just described was bordering on suicidal. When two alchemists activated an array cooperatively, the results could still be unpredictable. To actually work against each other?
"It was a miracle it didn't destroy you. Did you even care about that?"
Ed just looked up at him for a moment before giving a shrug. "It was the only thing I could think of at such short notice. If I hadn't done it, Hughes would have been trapped and the gate would have taken him for good. As it was, the only reason any of us got out was because Carmine was careless. This array," he tapped the one that he had said was for living sacrifice, "was a last-minute addition. There were flaws I was able to use. She wasn't even expecting me. It was you she was after." Roy stiffened, his already tense muscles twisting in more knots as confusion and guilt welled up. He knew Ed had suffered. Hughes had described the wound that had torn at him, now wiped clean by the strange felicity of the gate.
"She could have killed you," he muttered quietly, not really expecting Fullmetal to hear.
"That wasn't really part of her plan," Ed replied after a moment, his voice softer. "Besides, 1 month wouldn't really have made that much of a difference, would it?"
Roy looked up sharply, the words escaping before he could stop them.
Don't say that. Of course it makes a difference, especially if it should have been me and not you.
Ed glanced up from where he knelt by the array, his eyes unfathomable. In them was the cool flash of deep fear, and Roy realized just how right he had been earlier when he asked Edward what he was afraid of. He'd obviously been a lot closer to the mark than he realized.
"I think in the end all she wanted was a powerful alchemist," Edward replied, shrugging his shoulders. "You fit the bill as well as I do, unless she's an ex-lover of yours."
"Jealous, Fullmetal?" Roy asked, letting a smirk slide onto his lips.
"Shut up, bastard," Ed growled, a scowl snapping his brows together. "I'm being serious. You don't seem to recognize the name, but that doesn't mean that this wasn't more personal."
Roy walked idly along the line of the array, skirting it delicately as he examined the craftsmanship in it. Finally, he spoke from the opposite side of the circle.
"I've never dated an alchemist. Someone of this skill wouldn't be able to hide what they could do. It would be second nature to them. I don't know who she is or why she seemed to be after me, but it looks like you satisfied her needs."
There was a faint trace of accusation in his voice, unguarded and unwelcome, but he couldn't have hid it if he had tried.
"Maybe she sensed something in you that she wanted."
"Like what?"
Roy shook his head, running a hand through his hair.
"Maybe an understanding of what she was doing, or some kind of knowledge of her motivations. You told me she destroyed the gate. You sounded almost glad."
"I was ill and tired," Ed snapped, rising to his feet and crossing his arms as he glared. "I can't help it if I sounded grateful that she ripped apart the one thing that's been ruining my life since I was a kid."
He moved irritably, pacing back and forth along a small section of the array.
"That doesn't mean I sympathize with what she did. Fuck knows what the consequences will be. I didn't even think she could get back from that place, and I sure as hell didn't expect her to be running around Central."
"Yet you can read her arrays. You recognize them."
When Edward looked alarmed, Roy plunged on, knowing he had caught him off guard.
"You don't see vague similarities to the alchemy you use today. You know this."
He waved wildly to the design at their feet.
"How can I?" Edward demanded. "This kind of array originates over 4,000 years ago. I've never seen them before."
"How do you know that they're that old?"
Roy's question was the sting in the scorpion's tail, sibilant and meant to hurt.
"I doubt that there are any books on this, Edward. There's no research. But you already know it all. Tell me what's happened to you."
Unconsciously, his body had moved, pacing quickly across the intervening space. He grabbed Ed's wrists, letting his fear and his fury find its way into his grip. It was bruising, but Ed didn't flinch. Instead, his eyes were staring at the array beneath Roy's feet, and his pale face had taken on a distinctly nauseous twinge.
"Move!"
In a gesture so quick that Roy couldn't follow it, Ed had flipped his hand, grabbing Roy's wrist and pulling him as hard as he could. Pain shot up his arm, but it was nothing compared to the stinging sensation that crawled over his skin. It bowed his spine and clenched his teeth, making his muscles contract uncomfortably as he struggled against the thrill of power. In a heartbeat, he was free, staggering unceremoniously beyond the circumference and almost sprawling to the ground. Looking over his shoulder, he stared in sick horror at the lines of the array. The light grooves, shallow compared to the others, were bleeding like wounds. Crimson liquid welled up from the ground, tracing the outlines lovingly as it flowed and spilled along the channels. Where it touched the edges, the ground smoked, releasing the smell of rotting meat into the air. It made Roy gag, and he heard Edward swallowing convulsively nearby.
"Shit!"
Ed's curse was heartfelt, and Roy turned to see him backing away.
"Do you know what this is?"
Ed looked uncomfortable, as if torn between a lie for his self-preservation and the need to tell the truth. "I thought she should be stuck there, back at the gate," he confessed quietly. "And if it wasn't for her using my blood in the array, she probably still would be. I think it's created a conduit, a channel between here and there. He grabbed Roy again, forcing him to move away as the scarlet winked lewdly in the lamplight.
That's why she wanted an alchemist. For their blood. The realization made Roy shiver. It was powerful enough to create a link back to this world.
Ed's face was grim and haggard as he continued to back away, only stopping when his back touched the wall of the nearby warehouse. Carmine's intelligent. She'll have protected that array to make sure that the portal can't be used by accident. But there are probably things that belong beyond the gate that are trying to find their way back. His voice sounded choked and painful. If something is determined or powerful enough, then what's to stop it from trying to break back free? Roy swallowed, watching the bloody array shine wetly in the muted lights of the place. For a moment, there was nothing, no movement or sound. Then, as if rain disturbed its surface, the blood began to ripple. It was a tiny motion at first, almost unnoticeable. Yet, with each passing moment, it became more pronounced, until the viscous fluid seethed and began to blacken. Abruptly, Ed hurried forward, clapping his hands together and slapping them to the floor. Light flashed along the ground, forming sweeping circles in an instant. They flared out around him, runes scribing their own way across the earth. Roy gaped, stepping back as the smooth, clear circle surrounded where he stood. His logical mind knew it was a simple protective disc, but this was like no alchemy he had ever seen. Ed did not need a raise, but this complicated knot of a design was completely alien to him. How did Ed even know it would work? The array sparkled, glimmering with power as the alchemy around it began to falter and fail. Carmine's wards would not hold, and the locks of power that held back the tide from that plane of the gate failed abruptly. Power surged along Ed's array, and Roy stumbled as his body abruptly became heavy and exhausted. He didn't realize he had fallen until his knees hit the ground with bruising force. Desperately, he forced himself to keep his eyes open, to watch as Edward's face contorted in a horrible twist of pain. Roy could feel the power all around him. The energy in the air was immense, a deafening roar to all of the senses. It tasted of burning tin and smelled strongly of ozone. The hairs on the nape of his neck were standing on end as his skin tingled and trembled under the onslaught. Light, brilliant and dazzling, arced from one portion of the array to another, sharing and balancing the power as though Edward had done it 1,000 times before. Beneath him, the earth heaved, a roiling spasm that shook dust free from the buildings around them. With an ear-splitting crack, the ground split, forming a wide, deep flaw across the array. Abruptly, the power died, leaving the air baked in its wake. He could hear Ed's ragged panting and saw how much he was shaking. Sweat dripped off of his forehead, impacting with the bloody ground. For a moment, Roy thought that Ed would collapse in front of him, but he managed to get to his feet, weaving haphazardly. Quickly, he forced himself up, trembling as the strength that had been pulled from him flooded back again. In contrast, Ed seemed to pale further, and he bent double for a moment, hauling in deep breaths of air. "Before you ask," he mumbled, "I don't know what that was either. I was just trying to close the channel." Roy put a hand on Ed's shoulder, rubbing absently as he watched the hammering pulse point in Ed's throat begin to slow back to normal. His mind was a hive of questions, but all he could manage to croak was, "Are you all right?" Ed looked up at him for a moment, blinking sweat away from his eyes before he nodded. "I think it worked, but I'm not sure. It's probably a good idea to get out of here." He didn't protest as Roy led him back to the car and buckled him in before pulling away. A weak nod of agreement was the only reply Roy got when he said that they were going back to Hughes's house. Roy tightened his hands on the steering wheel, forcing himself to concentrate on the road and keeping his eyes off of Full Metal. The youth had rested his head against the window,
and his eyes were shut tight against the lights that drifted past. On his forehead, the array glittered, not with its usual light, but with a dappling of diamond pinpoints.
"What the hell has happened to you, Ed?"
Roy murmured to himself, knowing he would get no reply. In the space of a few days, Edward had changed completely. The doctors had said that his body was failing him, but his power had only increased and changed, morphing into something that Roy couldn't even begin to recognize. Suspicions, chilling and terrifying, were ricocheting around his head, and he had to force them aside. He would get Edward to safety and get back to the station. The city had to take priority. He just had a sinking feeling that there was something far bigger beginning to brew, something that put them all at risk. Back at the warehouse, the silence was disturbed. The ground shook again like the shuddering sigh of an old giant turning in its slumber. Blood still clung wetly to the array, dripping into the narrow chasm like wine from a goblet rim. Slowly, with a soft groan of animal sound, something emerged. A gray-tinged shadow, weak and frail. It spread like mist, lapping at the crimson fluid with an invisible tongue before it surged forward. It did not matter that the door had been closed. It had managed to pass through at the last moment. Besides, this was where it belonged. Here, in the living world. This was its home, its playground. Prey was everywhere, walking, breathing, living, thriving through their busy lives like ants. Once it had been powerful, godlike in its horror. Then a young alchemist had sunk it into the black abyss, tearing away its strength and depriving it of everything but the monotonous infinity of oblivion. Still, it had been patient. It had waited, and now it had its reward. Sinuously, the mist curled away, finding shelter in the dark, forgotten places of the metropolis. Its awareness did not sense the eyes that watched it, nor saw the battered body that, hours before, had pulled its way torturously through the same doorway that had just been destroyed. Only two things had retained the strength required to drag themselves away from the vacuous clutches of the gate's darkness, and only one of them was passably human, strong in body and sharp in mind. The only flaw in his androgynous form was the bitter, sucking absence of a soul. Envy smiled, stretching his arms over his head as he slipped away into the night. It was good to be back.